So you're using Emerson as a lens through which to look at the daughters of Tzelefchad.
Right.
And so I'm wondering, is that an accurate way of looking at it? That you're not seeing the Torah as a piece of literature? It sounds like the literary pieces inspire you in new ways of looking at the Torah.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's not that the literary pieces are necessary in and of themselves, except insofar as they've made you think, oh, here's a different way of looking at the world,
mm-hmm.
and therefore at the Torah. Is that accurate?
It's in the right ballpark. I mean, it's yes, but you can hear I'm a little not quite satisfied. I mean, I think basically that truth is one in some very basic way, and obviously not on the surface it's not. But in other words, if it's a good thing for people to be autonomous, if it's a good thing for people to be able to stand up and speak for themselves in a climate where everyone is saying something different, and if Emerson makes that the center of that essay, and more than that essay, actually, it's really the center of his whole philosophy. It becomes a spiritual philosophy, actually. It's not just an effective way of behaving in the world, to be assertive and so on. It becomes a way, he uses very philosophical terms, deeply philosophical terms, to describe what he thinks of as becoming a human being. That's the process by which you become a human being. And why do I look at Emerson in that particular context of B'not Tzelefchad? And it wasn't that I thought, well, B'not Tzelefchad, what am I going to say about them? Oh, there's something, Emerson has something about autonomy, and wouldn't it be nice if I could show that B'not Tzelefchad were our Jewish equivalent of that ideal? It really didn't work like that at all. It started with looking very closely into a lot of Jewish sources. I mean, that means a lot of the Mefarshim. And something just begins to gather, certain questions begin to gather. Why do they get such personal compliments from God? You know, Ken B'not Tzelefchad Dovrod. Why not simply, yes, they're right and they can have the land? They get what they asked for because the reasoning is correct. Well, if you want to translate Cain's B'not Tzelefchad Dovrod like that simply their reasoning is correct, then all right, fine. But I think it's pretty clear that it means something a bit more than that. If you look at Rashi and the Targum, it has an aesthetic element to it. It's a sense that they are the kind of people who are seeing things in a way that God feels matches some absolute that he has in front of him. And then the question arises, and it's a kind of internal question. Without bringing Emerson in yet, if the idea is to have laws that relate to how God's absolute way of looking at things, then why not does God not just give the law? Why is it done through a narrative? Narratives, you would think, are a weak media. It would be better just lay down the law. The sons inherit, unless there's no son, then the daughters inherit, as from God, straight from God, as all the other laws are, almost as all the other laws are given that way. So why in this case is it done this way? Through a particular story of people who come from a particular line of lineage and who live in a particular context, and there they come and they stand up. Why they stand up? Vata'amodna. What's the emphasis on that? In front of Moshe and in front of everybody, and then they start telling a story. You know, it's a story within a story. Instead of simply saying, "Well, we think the law should be," with some reference to their case, perhaps, but they really start as a story. Avinu met. Why all that? Which seems, in a way, if you're thinking of the Platonic idea of the one and the many, you know, that the one is the truth and the many is the distortions of sensuality and of living in this world, then why does the Torah here give the law through, I'm calling it the narrative, which is the many? Narrative is multiple focus. Narrative is time is a tremendous factor in it. Suspense, surprise, what's going to happen? They don't know what's going to happen when they speak. Why not have it simply that God says it and then everyone knows that's solid, that's real? And so that's the question that was really exercising me. And then I it's not a big step for me, because of my reading and because of my way of thinking that has developed over many years, and not everyone will agree with it perhaps, to think, well, that's exactly the way God ideally wants things to happen. It's almost the other way around, that if there aren't people who are zoche, then he has to give the Torah directly. But if there are people who are zoche, to respond to reality in a true way, in a way that God can countersign, then that's really the way of the future. Right? It starts off with Torah Shebichtav, but after that, Torah Shebaalpeh begins and has to begin. It can't. So the classic idea is that Torah Shebaalpeh began at a certain moment in history, much later. You know, it has to do with Galut and so forth. But there is a whole... There's a whole tendency, particularly among the Hasidic writers, to push it backwards and to say it actually began almost as soon as the Torah was given. As soon as the Torah was given, interpretation begins. And from a point of view, again, of general studies, of philosophy and psychology and anthropology, and, you know, so many disciplines, that's obvious that interpretation begins right away. That nothing stands by itself. Something is said, and immediately there are, you know, 10 different views of what it means, and people start saying. And I remember my 3-year-old delighting in saying, "Shulchan is table." You know, that's a translation, but it's an interpretation also. It's a way of saying it. I mean, Shulchan is different from table. It's a different language. It's a way of trying to connect things and open things up, and we begin to do that right away as soon as we open our eyes. And so the sense then that what I really liked here is, on the one hand, the Sfatimet saying that the period of the female begins here, and Bnot Tzlofchad, there was no accident that it's women who started, but it will not be run by women. It will be run by the Chachamim, the mode of Torah Shebal Peh. That's what they call that the time of the female. That Torah Shebal Peh is the mode of the female because it's not the primal thing that's given. It's the response to it, like the receptivity of a female to what is given, as it were, by the male. It's a Kabbalistic, purely biological, I think, infrastructure. Doesn't mean it's not creative, the receptive role. And so the sense now is that you need now people who are able to deal with the text with all the equipment of a full human being. And there are many midrashim that say that if one does that, then he creates the whole world. He creates himself. I mean, that's the bit that interests me. And that's very close to Anthony. I couldn't help thinking of Emerson. You know, that Emerson, in a relatively simple way, actually says the same thing. It's not that I'm looking for something. It's just that everyone knows Emerson, or people should know Emerson. And it does add something even for me. I mean, no question, it adds for me.
Well, I wanted to ask you about that because up until this point, yes, you don't need Emerson. Everything you just said was born out of
yes,
classical Jewish commentaries.
Right, right, right.
So what...
So at what place does...
It add?
What does it add? Yeah. First of all, I really like translation. I really like the exercise of... To teach in Ivrit never really appealed to me. Because then what do you say? You know, there's Kedusha in the text and you say Kedusha. So what have you learned? You depend on the fact that everyone knows what Kedusha is. And here we are actually just treadmilling. You know, we're walking in place. We're not really adding anything. But if I translate Kedusha in some slightly interesting way, not just holiness, and into a language that clearly belongs to another world, it belongs to another culture, it's non-purist. It's a non-purist approach. And then suddenly your ideas get kind of electrified a little bit, you know, and you just begin to think, oh. And Kedusha becomes an interesting subject. Becomes something that's alive again, rather than, oh, well, it's a matter of, you know, not doing things that are dubious and blah, blah. You know, who can get excited about that? And so I like translating. And one process of translating, metaphors, one process of translating is to go to a different culture and to see how they articulate a similar idea. And then there's something happens between the two things. So there's something that comes alive. So I would say I'm not using, I think perhaps the difference between what I do and even Nechama Leibowitz used to do, Aleha Shalom, and she talked a lot about it when I told you I had a conversation with her. And she said, I also like to use literature and so on. And she regarded us as kindred spirits. She was very sweet and lovely, and I didn't complicate life for her too much. Mm-hmm. But I inwardly I thought it's a little different because, and I made the change in my own life actually at a certain point. Up to a point I was doing that fairly conventional thing, which was, you know, here's a concept, so I'll illustrate it by an example from the secular world of some kind. And that's fine. And I began to feel that what I really wanted to do was kind of weave a tapestry in which, you know, here would be Emerson, and here would be the Sfatimet, and here would be Rashi. And then you can see how the one reacts on the other. It's what, the force field image that I like. Rather than sort of staying within the central experience and maybe peeping out every now and then to see what else is going on in the world. Mm-hmm. And this just seems to me, it just seems much more creative. It's as if you're you're really trying to make something which hopefully remains authentic, but which touches people, it touches me certainly, and it touches other people too, I understand, where they really live. That is, in a kind of conflicted place sometimes, where there are a number of things going on, and so they feel that something is speaking to that, rather than just, you know, look upwards and kind of simplify, you know, which is also, who is that, Thoreau? And it's part of his philosophy, of, you know. Anyway, but my point is just that I like complexifying. I like the thickness, and I end up the week usually very happy because I just feel that something thick has been created, and it's very satisfying.